The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As you've heard on the news, 7 aid workers have been killed in Gaza. The organisation World Central Kitchen said the workers from countries including the United Kingdom, Poland and Australia. And it comes a day after an airstrike on Iran's consulate in Damascus, which saw two top military Iranian officials killed. Joining me now, live from Israel, is Alistair Bunkle, Middle East correspondent for Sky News. Good morning, Alistair.
Good morning.
What is Israel officially saying about the killing of the World Central Kitchen aid workers?
Well, Israel hasn't admitted responsibility, although it is the prime suspect in this for obvious reasons. They say they are investigating it thoroughly at the highest levels. Now, look, until the Israelis confirm it was them, we always have to rightly reserve judgment, because there have been instances in Gaza where misfired rockets by Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad have fallen short and caused damage. But the Israelis have large operational control over Gaza now. The rate of Hamas rocket fire is greatly diminished. And what I would say is that in incidents over the past few months, when the finger of blame has been pointed at the Israelis, but they don't believe it was them, they've come out very quickly and robustly to deny their involvement. And they haven't done that this time.
Now, this comes just days after Al Jazeera released video showing the IDF killing what looked like killing two innocent civilians, who waving a white flag, and then showing the burial of their bodies.
I'm afraid there's been quite a lot of incidents like that over recent weeks. The British broadcaster ITV News had also documented an incident of Gazan men waving white flags and then being shot dead. We have seen media organisations around the world, including Sky News, including organisations in America, taking incidents of people who had mistaken identities and were killed for seemingly no reason. And one that immediately springs to mind was a drone strike on a man who was purportedly carrying a rocket launcher. And it turned out, on greater analysis by, I think it was the New York Times, that actually he was wheeling a bicycle through an alleyway in Gaza. And he was mistaken by a drone, 20,000 feet above, and taken out in a drone strike. So there have been multiple cases in this war, as there are in wars all over the world, but there have been multiple cases in this war of people being killed who were not, it seemed, fighters for Hamas, but innocent civilians.
Netanyahu has branded Al Jazeera a terrorist network in collusion with Hamas. He has revived his bid to ban Al Jazeera. How is that faring?
Well, this is because yesterday the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, passed a new bill that gives Netanyahu the ability to outlaw, or the Israeli government, I should say, the ability to outlaw and to ban any news outlet that it deems to be effectively an enemy of the state. Now, the relationship between Israel and Al Jazeera has always been a testy one. Al Jazeera, for those who don't know, is a channel that is Qatari funded by the Qatari government. They have an English language international arm and an Arabic arm. The Qatari government has close relations with Hamas. Hamas have an office in Qatar. Some people might object to that, but actually it's proved very useful as a mediation option during the ceasefire negotiations. But Israel has long believed that Al Jazeera, particularly its Arabic language channel, is, in their words, effectively a mouthpiece for Hamas. Now, Al Jazeera over here in Jerusalem, where I am now, or if you go into the West Bank or you go into Gaza, is the most watched news channel. It is everybody watches Al Jazeera for their news. They have been broadcasting nonstop from Gaza. But this is an attempt by the Israelis to get it out of the country, to stop it broadcasting here, as we have, I should say, seen other governments do in other situations. I think of the British government banning RT Russia Today. I think Press TV as well in the UK is banned. So the Israelis looking to try and do that. But the timing is quite curious, given its links to Qatar and how crucial Qatar are in the ongoing ceasefire talks.
How informed is the Israeli public about what is really going on in Gaza?
That's a really good question. It depends what you watch or what you read. To be frank, and I'm always, you know, I don't like sort of critiquing journalistic colleagues, but the truth is if you watch Israeli news channels throughout the day, there is very little coverage of what's going on from a Gazan point of view. So it's pretty much wall-to-wall coverage about the war and anything related to the war, i.e. sort of anti-Netanyahu protests, for example. But it's broadly from an Israeli angle. So it'll focus on Israeli military operations and successes. What you don't see much of, very little of, is any suffering on the ground in Gaza. Now, I should say, out of balance, if you watch something like Al Jazeera, it too is very focused on the Gazan side of things as opposed to the Israeli aspect or the Israeli side of the story. So it is a very, very polarized media landscape here. It's slightly different with some of the print publications. Haaretz, for example, which is a left-leaning newspaper over here that has an English language version, will often carry articles about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, will often carry articles very critical of the Israeli government. But on the whole, what Israelis watch on their TV is pretty one-sided, I would say.
What of the protests over the weekend about Netanyahu? Are they significant?
Well, they're significant in that they are growing again. They had sort of faded away a bit at the start of the war after we saw sort of hundreds of thousands protesting during the first half of last year because of judicial reforms. Then October 7th happened and the country sort of rallied around, particularly around the IDF, and they faded away. But as the war has moved on and the months have ticked by, we've seen the protests gathering in size again. And the weekend, I think, was the biggest we've seen so far. Still not up at the levels that we saw pre-war, but definitely growing in size. Is it enough to threaten Netanyahu and his government? I don't think so yet, but opposition is growing. There was always going to become a day when people started to point the finger as to who should be held responsible for October the 7th. I think we're getting closer to that day. I also think there are actually some very significant things happening. For example, the drafting of Haredi men and women into the IDF that might be beginning. That's the sort of thing that could bring down the government. Hasn't done so yet. But yeah, there is a sizable opposition to Benjamin Netanyahu. But I don't think his government's going to fall just yet, not least because there's no single one candidate in his party who is standing out as an alternative candidate at the moment.
One of the things over the weekend that was a sharp contrast was the footage showing Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City following the Israeli Defense Forces evacuating from there, having finished their operation and leaving many dead. And the comparison with Netanyahu, who needed an urgent hernia operation and who got the very best of high-tech medicine to look after him.
Yes, he had that hernia operation over the weekend and is recovered and back to work, as far as I understand it. So it was a fairly swift and I think quite routine operation. The other operation, as you say, was the military operation in Al-Shifa, the second time that the IDF have needed to conduct a major operation around that hospital complex. It was a kind of bizarre, as you grow used to here, it's like bizarre juxtaposition of version of events that played out yesterday. On the one hand, I sat on an IDF briefing for about an hour, and the IDF were saying how it was an operation where they spared the lives of all civilians and innocents. They didn't harm anybody who wasn't a Hamas terrorist. It was carried out with great care to civilian and patient safety. And then sort of within hours, once the IDF had withdrawn, we were getting pictures from the hospital itself showing civilians dead and just complete devastation. The IDF admitted that they'd virtually flattened much of the hospital in their attempts to root out Hamas in the hospital. And so, yet again, we have a medical facility, a major medical facility in Gaza that is no longer operational.
Finally, I should ask you for a reaction to that attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. What are the IDF saying, or what is the Israeli government saying about that? Or are they, you know, saying nothing for the moment?
They're saying nothing, but that's pretty common. The IDF, the Israelis carry out a lot of attacks in and around Syria and Lebanon. They have been hitting, I mean, they've hit Damascus hundreds of times over the years, but they've hit in and around Damascus quite a lot in recent weeks. They don't tend to confirm or deny involvement there. Ever so occasionally they hint at their involvement, but often it is a sort of a no comment statement that you get back from them. But they've taken out a senior Iranian commander, a guy called General Mohammad Zahidi, who was the commander of the Al-Quds force in Syria and Lebanon. So really one of Iran's main military figures who sort of had the link with Hezbollah, and so was always going to be a key target for the Israelis. But the fact that they've taken him out, and they've done so on Iranian consulate territory, flattening the consulate in Damascus, that is an escalation. But they will see that as an escalation that is worth the risk because of how high profile and influential this guy was. Now, how significant this is as an escalation will only, I think, be realized depending on what the Iranian response is. And they have threatened to respond, as you would expect they would. What I would say, though, is that Iran has tended to want to stay at arm's length during this war, and they have not retaliated for a number of things in the past in the way that you might expect them to. But we'll just have to see whether or not there is any significant response to this.
Alistair Munkel, Middle East correspondent for Sky News. Alistair, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And listening to that conversation, Duncan Bullivant, a former diplomat and CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Picking up on that Damascus attack and the possible retaliation, what do you think is likely to be done by the Iranians?
Well, the Iranians will have to do something to save face, but they will also be calculating, as will others, what level of response that is going to be. This is a pretty significant ramping up of Israeli-Iranian conflict in the region. It will most likely be a military target, and it will most likely involve Hezbollah, because don't forget, amongst those that were killed in Damascus was a senior Hezbollah leader as well. So, look, I think this escalation is an inevitability at this point. But if we, I mean, I've just been listening to Alistair's incredibly useful and detailed report there. But if you look at this across the board, if you were to start from scratch on a Tuesday morning and look at the situation now in Gaza with regard to the Iranians and regard to Israel, you've got aid workers killed. You've got a diplomatic office bombed, and you've got a hospital destroyed. The optics of this are beyond shocking. The trouble is, we've got used to it. We've been drawn into this situation. And I think, just getting back to your point on Iran, is that, you know, Israel cannot appear weak at any point in the region. If the moment it shows weakness, or the moment it shows some form of humility, it fears it will be punished by its aggressive neighbors, by the Iranian proxy groups. And of course, the United States can't afford for Israel to look weak either, because the US regional policy hinges on Israel. And so, you know, we're looking now at a desperate situation in many ways, where Israel's increasing response, and I think we need to be clear, it's the Israeli government's increasing response to pressure coming from both the US and the international community, is to lash out even harder, which is drawing the United States almost to the point of a sort of Faustian pact, where they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. They can't, you know, they've criticized Israel openly. They're still providing ammunition and weapon systems to Israel. Israel seems at this point that it feels justified in not necessarily showing the restraint that we would expect from a liberal democracy. And the very worst levels of escalation that many people assumed wouldn't happen are slowly eroding. We're seeing things happen now that would have been completely unthinkable 6 weeks ago. So, yeah, I think it's a pretty serious situation.
Why do you believe that Israel is prepared to run down whatever international credit it has left?
I think it's unfortunately, it's a manifestation of an extremely difficult government. I think it's too easy to say that Netanyahu leads an extreme right-wing group. He leads a nationalist group, who are in many ways chauvinistic in their view of the relationship between Israeli Jews and Palestinians, and for whom actually the situation is in their political philosophy is moving towards what they've always wanted, which is a showdown and a rebalancing of the relationships in the Middle East, with Israel and the United States coming out on top, which is a position that they've taken for some time. It's certainly been Netanyahu's position for over 20, 30 years. And we shouldn't be surprised. I think what has taken us all by surprise is the audacity with and the sort of almost careless ease with which they're moving into this regional escalation. Mm. And of course, the voice from the United States is pretty weak.
Yeah, because obviously Biden is looking to the significant Jewish lobby in the United States and wondering to what extent he can offend them without them abandoning the Democratic Party. I mean, the talk about Hobson's choice. I mean, the other side is Trump. So it's a very delicate line for tightrope, indeed, for him to walk.
An incredibly difficult line for him to walk. And of course, the other issue is that within his natural support base amongst the younger voters in the United States, there's outrage at the conflict in Gaza, which is probably on the other side of reality, which paints the Israelis purely as the aggressor. So I think, again, I've always maintained it's an intractable situation, but the Israelis are making it very, very hard for other liberal democracies around the world. And I think, you know, now, you know, the UK has always been quite a strong supporter of Israel and recently a friendly critic. But now you're looking at the Australians wading in. I don't think the EU are going to respond particularly well to this. And I think certainly the Polish government will want some explanation in terms of how one of their citizens has been killed this way, depending on obviously the outcome of that investigation.
Now, one of my texters says, I was corresponding with Israeli friends in recent weeks and they are completely brainwashed. They did not believe anything I told them, as they say they see very little about Gaza in their media. We are no longer friends because they've now blanked me. And that question of how informed they are, I mean, the big lie is often used by governments, and the suggestion that the destruction of Al-Shifa Hospital is some sort of a wonderful military victory defies logic.
It defies logic, but also I think, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think the balance that the Israeli, and I would not want to be in the Israeli position. I have real sympathy for the position that their military commanders find themselves in, because it is such a mess. But, you know, there is no doubt that Hamas were using the hospital as an operating base and wanted the Israelis to attack them. And the Israelis have given them exactly what they wanted, which is global imagery of a destroyed hospital and for very little military gain. It's like it's a dumb victory. You know, this is exactly what Hamas wanted. It's all part of the propaganda game. But who suffers at the end of the day? Not Hamas, not the Israeli Defense Force. They take casualties. I'm afraid that's war. It's poor people with few resources holding on to life the best they can. That's ultimately who suffers in these circumstances. And that's been the same for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Mm. Will anything happen as a result of the pressure put on Erdogan in Turkey, who's a kind of a mover and a shaker and shaper of things sometimes in the Middle East, because it is a bridge between West and East? Is anything going to happen there that can make him either more or less influential or more eager to get involved?
I think the worse the situation gets in Israel, and particularly I'm talking about, you know, obviously Gaza, but the worse the political situation gets in Israel for Netanyahu, there is possibly a role for Turkey, for Erdogan to get involved in what the end state looks like. And I think just to get to your point, a Turkish role is problematic because it's not entirely straightforward. You've got the US now considering its position in Syria. You've got the Syrian Free Army and others now genuinely seeing that they may be snuffed out over the next few months and year or so, because US support, it seems to be waning. The Turks are still having a low intensity war against the PKK, Kurdish separatists in that Syrian region. So you may well see the situation in Syria change to Turkey's advantage, which would give them greater leverage in the region and more power in the region. But at some point, a figure like Erdogan, who has got more of one could argue, balanced position, who is not directly linked to Hamas, is going to have to come forward, because this thing has to end in dialogue, and we are way off that at the moment. And it isn't going to come from the West, and it isn't going to come from Arab Street. It's going to have to be another regional player, and that may be a role that the Turks play, amongst others.
Duncan, thank you very much for joining us. Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Risk Group and International Risk Management Advisory.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.